You're listening to Stateside on Michigan Radio. Today marks 50 years since NASA faced one of its biggest setbacks.
It was all over in one stunned, horrifying second. Astronauts Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee, the prime crew of Apollo 1, our first manned Apollo flight, at T-minus 10 minutes in a simulated countdown for the flight at Cape Kennedy. It was 6:31 p.m. Eastern Time last night. After delays caused by minor problems, they'd reached the climactic moments of the countdown. Plugs out, the spacecraft was on its own internal power, disconnected from Pad 34's electrical supply. Apollo's instrument panel with hundreds of gauges, switches, and dials was in front of them. As the count progressed, each crewman flicked switches. Then they got into a hold, and suddenly the moment of death. An electrical spark apparently shot out and ignited the 100% oxygen in the cabin that they were breathing as in a real spaceflight. Their faceplates were down, Apollo's hatch sealed. On closed circuit TV screens, 218 feet below in the blockhouse, horrified engineers watched the burst of flames and smoke envelop Grissom, White, and Chaffee. They heard their last words of shock and surprise. It was over in an unbelievable microsecond. The flames enveloped Apollo 1, burning the couches, charring the spacesuits. The crewmen never had a chance.
That was Jules Bergman with ABC News. Apollo 1 crew member Roger B. Chaffee's hometown is Grand Rapids. Joining us by Skype to talk about Chaffee is former NASA historian Glenn Swanson, who is currently a visiting instructor in the Department of Physics at Grand Valley State University. Welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about Roger Chaffee a bit. Now, I understand he learned to fly at a young age.
Yes, he did. His dad was a barnstormer back in the day, and so he was able to take young Roger up at a rather early age to kind of get the bug of flying started in him. And of course, he was quite proud that the bug took hold and carried him on to eventually becoming an astronaut.
Chaffee was a Naval Reserve officer. He had a role during the Cuban Missile Crisis. What did he do?
Yeah, so a lot of people don't realize that he had quite a critical role while he was stationed with an aerial reconnaissance group that routinely flew out of Florida. Some of the flights that they requested to take were over Cuba in the early 1960s. And of course, if our listeners will recall that in 1961-62, we were eyeball to eyeball with the then Soviet Union. And then President Kennedy got evidence from one of these flights to reaffirm this idea that indeed missiles were being deployed there in Cuba. And one of the flights that took those photographs was one flown by a then young Navy Lieutenant Roger B. Chaffee. He actually was recognized in 1966 by the government and the Navy with an award for basically the service that he rendered to his country for helping to identify that threat.
Chaffee was among one of the younger recruits in NASA's manned space program. How did he manage to get into it?
Well, that's a good question. And if somebody had a definitive answer for that, it would probably make it a lot easier for others to be selected. But you're correct. He was at that time in Group 3, the third group of astronauts that were selected. It was made up of about 14 astronauts. And he was at that point in time, this was in 1963, the youngest person to have been selected as an astronaut. He was only 28 years old when he was selected. And another interesting point I might add is that in that same group of astronauts, Gene Cernan was selected. And some of our listeners might recall that he just recently passed away about a week ago.
Yeah, the last man to walk on the moon.
Yes.
So let's put things in perspective. That day, the day the Apollo 1 crew died in that fire, was a dark one for NASA. But up until then, things have been going really well for the agency. Tell us about the optimism of the time.
Yes, the optimism of the time was kind of signified by something they called Go Fever. NASA had basically ridden the wave of multiple successes, first defined by the Mercury missions, the six men that essentially went into low Earth orbit to try out this whole idea of going into space, and that followed by 10 subsequent successful missions with the two-man Gemini program.
The deaths of the Apollo 1 crew was a big setback for NASA, as we said. But there were a lot of valuable lessons after all of the investigations internally and by Congress. How did the space agency's manned flight program change?
It has been said that because of the failure of Apollo 1, it allowed for the subsequent success of the Apollo missions, which basically culminated in the successful lunar landing of Apollo 11, and then thereby allowed us to return to the surface of the moon successfully six other times. So there was a lot learned from that mission, and with the Go Fever, it basically put a built-in hold, if you will, in NASA parlance, to the whole program for about 2 years, because the accident occurred, of course, in 67, and we didn't resume flying again until Apollo 7 in October of 68. And so it basically allowed us all to set back and reassess the program, the technology that we're using, the procedures, because prior to that, a lot of these issues that they had with the program, the astronauts themselves were somewhat reluctant to call them out because they knew that if they did, they could easily be replaced. There were a lot of other people just waiting to get a mission. So they had to kind of play this delicate balancing act, a tightrope act, if you will, of trying to address these issues, but at the same time also not drawing too much attention. So it really helped the program overall because it was a new spacecraft. It was a new contractor we had not used before. And so there was a lot of newness overall. And because of that, we needed to really assess what we were doing.
There's going to be a free conference early next month in Grand Rapids. It's called Roger That, a celebration of space exploration in honor of Roger B. Chaffee. What can people expect at that?
Well, we hope they'll come. It's a two-day event starting on Friday, February 10th and going February 11th. We have 15 academic speakers that will speak on a variety of subjects, everything from the archaeology of astronomy to space exploration at what cost to the arts. And we will also, as a highlight for the event, have Martha Chaffee, Roger's widow, attend, as well as his daughter, Cheryl Chaffee, at an evening dinner.
Again, that Roger That conference will be held Friday and Saturday, the 10th and 11th of February. Glenn Swanson is a visiting instructor at the Department of Physics at Grand Valley State University and a former NASA historian. Thanks very much for telling us about Roger B. Chaffee.
Thank you very much.